ప్రేమ స్వరూపులైన విద్యార్థులారా, విద్యా బోధకులారా, విద్యాభిమానులారా,
I am like the roaring lion in the dream. My roaring will wake you up from this dream unto reality.
This is The Lion's Roar, the DSI podcast all about understanding the teachings of Satya Sai Baba in their truest form.
Sai Ram everyone, Pradhani again. Gosh, Swami has really taken us on a sensational ride in this discourse so far, hasn't he? He's been dishing out hard-hitting truths about the mysterious and marvellous role played by our senses. Last episode, we saw heads roll, Sishupalas to be precise, and had our minds blown with Swami's bold proclamation that it is our own defective thought processes and feelings that taint the otherwise pure senses. We also saw that any apparent defect in creation is a result of our own defective vision. The world takes shape according to our viewpoint. So if our viewpoint is that all is God, then that is what we will see. Swami assures us that if we can use our senses in the proper way, they will offer us the right impressions. Just like in the case of Tukaram, who was able to give a favorable interpretation even to his wife's rude and negative behavior. His senses didn't stand in the way of his spiritual progress and equanimity. Kabir's wife was the polar opposite to Tukaram's wife, and yet he too was able to harmonize his senses and remain unfazed by any externalities because he was always engaged in remembrance of God. In relating these seemingly contrasting anecdotes, Swami cleverly illustrates that the environment has nothing to do with our own shortcomings. Swami reiterates that what we need to do is harmonize our own thoughts and feelings and not look to blame the environment for our own failures and weaknesses. How do we do this? Through proper spiritual discipline. And as we saw in episode 5, only that spiritual practice that has as its goal the attainment of God, the realization of the supreme truth, is proper. Anything else will lead us astray, away from the goal. We may wonder, why did God give us outwardly directed senses in the first place? Swami doesn't sugarcoat it when he asserts that some stubborn people raise such vain arguments, blaming God for giving outgoing orientation to our senses, like our ears that only take in external sounds, and our eyes with doors that only open to the world outside us. But by now, we surely know better than to blame the Creator. The fault actually lies with us. Swami elaborates on the ways in which we can be so quick to justify our sensuous behavior by hiding behind assertions like, to err is human. Our compassionate but firm Mother Sai stops us right in our tracks here. Swami proclaims that such misleading rationalization is a travesty of truth and is worthy of strong condemnation, especially when it is indulged by the youth. Swami strikes down two misconceptions here. He remarks that, not only is it wrong to think that we are human, but sometimes we even sheepishly rely on this mistaken notion that we're human to justify our shortcomings. Speaking of sheep, Swami then draws our attention to a very important distinction between animals and humans. Swami explains, if animals behave wrongly, it's understandable, because they aren't endowed with the faculty of discrimination to control and guide their senses. On the contrary, if man, who is blessed by God with the power of discrimination, takes to the wrong path and yields to his senses, it is highly unpardonable. How paradoxical and ridiculous it is to be born as a human and to behave as an animal. By leaving our senses unchecked, and then making matters worse by blaming God for our externally oriented senses and justifying our failings by saying, we're just human, doesn't it really feel like we've been pulling the wool over our own eyes this whole time? All of this is simply a result of us not using our faculty of discrimination. We need to use our God-given intellect to question, should I give in to the senses? Yes or no? As soon as the senses make a demand, we just work towards fulfilling it, almost on autopilot. Swami's pointing out that everything needs to go through a checkpost. The intellect, or buddhi, needs to be used to control and guide the senses. Sure, there may be side roads and back routes that allow you to bypass the main checkpost. But the result of this is that we are behaving no different to animals. Swami then draws another stark comparison between us and our furry friends. He recounts how some students argue that birds, cattle, and beasts appear to have full freedom to eat, mate, and roam as they wish, and in turn, question why humans should be denied such freedom if lower animals get to enjoy freedom to this extent. In answering this question, Swami prods us further to inquire about what it means to be free. He explains that animals do indeed enjoy animal freedom, but as humans, isn't it wrong and unbecoming of us to want to enjoy such animal freedom? What then is true freedom? Swami lovingly explains that what we should strive for is freedom from the senses and not freedom of the senses. In his infinite wisdom, Swami tells us that true freedom lies in controlling the senses and the lower self in an attempt to attain the higher self, our real self. True freedom is freedom from the senses. Wow. Doesn't that just take the practice of sense control to a whole other level? Let's cast ourselves back to episode 2 for a moment, when we embarked on a relentless pursuit through the jungle to capture the elusive and restless beast that is our senses. Now that we're armed with Swami's hard-hitting proclamation on true freedom, what would be the ideal ending to this pursuit? Is it physically ensnaring the treacherous beast and stifling its movement and physical ability, or is it in giving up chase altogether and refraining from the wild goose chase of sensual pleasures? Or perhaps the beast will be tamed automatically if we just give this burden up to someone more skilled than us, who knows the inner workings of this beast. Okay, Swami, you've got our undivided attention now. I mean, who doesn't want to experience true freedom? What does it look like to be free from the senses practically? Let's look at a hypothetical scenario that may in fact be a bit more real life than hypothetical. Either way, say you've given up sweet treats as a means of practicing a form of sense control. It's late at night and you've been at this lofty goal of sugar hiatus for what feels like months now. You're about to call it a day, but then the smell of a cake that was just baked earlier that day for the kids to take to school the next day wafts through your bedroom door. You fight the urges, you toss and turn in bed, trying to tell yourself not to think about it and just to get some sleep. But then you realise that all the lights in the house are out, and you're probably the only one still awake. Would it be such a bad idea to tiptoe to the kitchen and indulge in that tiniest morsel of cake? Nobody would even know. Before you know it, you're 3 servings into that sugary, buttery goodness. You feel utterly satiated. Until the bellyache kicks in, that is. Let's freeze frame here. You find yourself in the kitchen, staring longingly at your freshly baked nemesis, with no one in sight to stop you from devouring it. Are you truly free in this moment to have your cake and eat it too? We have somehow developed this idea that freedom is to do as we please. What Swami is so rightly pointing out here is that we are actually not doing as we please. We are doing as the senses please. What a clever silent victory for them. We now have enough tools in our toolbox to use our God-given faculty of discrimination and bring to mind all the methods Swami has taught us. Lord of the animals, desire then disgust, thing of sorrow, diversion, the knowledge that sense pleasures are momentary and deceptive. We have no excuse, do we? We have to make the effort. We have to march towards true freedom, to a state where the horses go where we tell them to go, where we have control over what our tongue says, where our eyes see only what we direct them to see, where if we say no, the senses obediently oblige. Could there be any better icing on the cake? Is there a goal more worthy of working towards than to be the true master of the senses? With that soul-smacking food for thought, it's time to bring this episode to an end. In the next episode, we reflect on all the practical methods Swami has given us throughout this discourse. Join us as we create a little cheat sheet that we can draw upon when it all feels too hard. Until next time, stay rawsome.